Welcome to Luxury News Weekly, your number one source for luxury news. I'm your host, Simba Wakatama.
And I'm your host, Elizabeth Solaru.
Hello and welcome to Luxury News Weekly. We have exciting stories today. We are talking about how Balenciaga, Kanye West, and Gap will break the internet. Why Dior gave Travis Scott the cold shoulder. How a gang of women stole Rolexes from millionaires. And why watch lovers should care about this $81,000 Omega. And lastly, guess what? They found James Bond's stolen Aston Martin. So let's get into this. Right. Story number one. It's all about how Kanye West, The Gap, and Balenciaga will most likely break the internet with this collaboration. It is the Yeezy Gap engineered by Balenciaga collection. Right. Now, on first opinions, I'm thinking, why is The Gap even entertaining? Sorry, why is Balenciaga even entertaining The Gap, right? And then, of course, throw Kanye in the mix, and it kind of makes sense. Elizabeth, first take, what do you think?
Thank you, Simba. These are my initial thoughts. I think this collaboration could be fantastic for Gap. But let's go back a little further. Let's go back to 2020 when Kanye signed a giant 10-year deal with Gap. And although only a couple of items have been released so far, it's attracted off-the-charts levels of attention. So, for example, when the round jacket for $200, when it first went on sale last summer, it actually crashed the Gap's website and it instantly sold out. Also, there's a massive resale value for that jacket because if you want to buy the same jacket now on certain resale sites, you have to spend $7,800. So yes, my initial thoughts is that this collaboration between Balenciaga, Kanye, and Gap, I think it has the potential to break the internet if it's done right.
Yeah. Now, you know I love to hate on Balenciaga.
Oh, tell right? me more.
Okay. Here's my concern. As we know, Balenciaga has been kind of like one of the top brands as far as media presence in 2021. They even beat Gucci. But they did it through a lot of meme culture, I would say, and scandals, which for a long-term strategy, in my opinion, is just not it, especially for such an established luxury brand with prestige. But, prestige's little brother is hype, and hype sells, right? Hype sells. Prestige gets respect. Now, Denma, who is the creative director, and he changed his name just like Kanye changed his name to Yee, Denma is now just his whole name, first and last, right? He is notorious for pushing the boundaries of social culture in fashion, using fashion, let me say, and marketing. But how he goes about it is what I don't like. Because a lot of the designs I do like, there's some crazy things every now and then, but I just really don't like how he goes about it. And it's always just got this side of cringe to me. Like, I can quote him where he's talking about the Gap being accessible and, you know, that's kind of a thing that he wants to emulate with this collection. But. Here's what he says. Denma says, there's a certain urban minimalism and poetry in our aesthetic and also a desire to push boundaries. When people say urban minimalism, when people say urban in general,
they mean black.
What they're trying to say is black.
They mean black culture.
Blackity black, politely, respectfully. So there's a certain black minimalism and poetry in our aesthetic. Oh my goodness. And you're doing this while you're using Kanye, who is revitalizing The Gap, which is going to just pump these things out. So that's first strike. Second strike. Because he does that a lot. We've talked about the sagging pants he's made. We've talked about all these things. Second strike. You are, like, Gap just did a collaboration with Walmart. Now they're doing a collaboration with Balenciaga. What? Who are they targeting exactly? Right? Balenciaga is for rich people. Rich kids now. Rich kids. That's Balenciaga. Now they're going the Gap style. I feel like it's just a super hype play. Super hype play. And it does not, it just takes the company further and further away from its core values.
Are you talking about, when you say the company, do you mean Gap or do you mean Balenciaga?
Balenciaga, Balenciaga.
Right. Okay. So this is my take on it. I think you've brought up something very important, because right now Gap needs to revitalize itself very badly. I remember many, many years ago when they did all these colorful sweaters, and they had these incredible, lovely adverts using color. And then something happened, and then they just fell off whatever it is. They just fell off the fashion, whatever. But I think right now Gap needs to really sit down and look at its long-term strategy and ask itself, who do we want to serve? You know, because right now, from what I can see, they're going after quick fixes. Balenciaga will Balenciaga, to be honest with you. They will do what they need to do. Demna, he will always push the boundaries, and he will always appropriate, not quite nicely, the Black culture. But he is a successful commercial person. I think he's got the commercial part of it. He's got that right. My problem is with Gap. And my problem is, yes, these quick collaborations and quick fixes, your server get, you know, your internet is crashed, your website is crashed, but what's the long-term strategy for returning shareholder value? That's where I have a bit of a problem.
Yep. And that's exactly where I agree with you. You know, that's why I hate on Balenciaga. It's not the fashion all the time, well, some of the time, but it's mostly, where is this going? And one thing, I watched an interview from the CEO of Balenciaga, and from his description of how he talks about the company, they seem to see their marketing as a product. Like, they see their marketing as a product in and of itself, right? And they're trying to be very innovative. And that comes out in ways where, of course, they push the metaverse. They push the, you know, animated collaborations like they did with The Simpsons. You know, so I'm not surprised that they're doing weird and strange things. But when you're thinking long term, right now, it's kind of like the brand is in their 20s and they're just trying everything. And it doesn't work when you've been a very old and established brand, because that's what we call a midlife crisis, right? A grown person acting like they're in their 20s.
But you know what, though?
So,
like a real life midlife crisis, if it feels good and it's working for them and they're not causing any harm, why not?
I can think of a million reasons why not, but hey, well, we'll leave it at that. Now, here's another interesting story involving a celebrity that I think is very topical. All right, so why did Dior give Cactus Jack, Travis Scott, the cold shoulder? Well, for those who know, it's pretty obvious, but for those who don't know, let's get started with a little bit of facts. Well, so Travis Scott had a large concert, an event called Astroworld in Texas. And at that event, which was huge, I think it was 50,000 people that attended, as many as 10 people died and 300 people were injured. Now, Travis Scott, at the same time, had a bunch of deals with Dior. They were releasing, he had collaborated with them before, but they were releasing a new collection summer this year, right, 2022. And so they had to plan, of course, way ahead of time, because by now they're probably in production, right, for this entire collection. and they have to postpone it now. They said out of respect for everyone affected by the tragic events of Astroworld. There's a lot of controversy around that event that I won't exactly get into, but Dior is not touching it with a 10-foot pole.
To be honest, I do not blame them at all. I think his name right now is Mud. And it's interesting that it's not just Dior who's cancelled their collaboration with him. Nike has also done the same thing, because Nike was meant to launch two Air Max 1 sneakers with Scott in December, but they postponed the launch indefinitely weeks after the festival. And they said that its partnership with Scott had concluded. The thing is, though, and I know this might sound a bit controversial, I really do not see Travis Scott with Dior. I don't see that partnership, to be honest. Dior are usually very, very good when it comes to choosing their ambassadors, because they tend to choose really cool, really level-headed, calm, appealing ambassadors. But I can't get my head round this particular partnership. So maybe for Dior, this could be a get-out-of-jail card for them?
Well, you know, I see it now that I've seen a couple of the things he's done with Dior. And the way I look at it, working with Travis Scott, because he has such a loyal fan base, and his brand is Cactus Jack, right?
Yeah.
Because he has such a loyal fan base and they're quite young, it's Dior's way of introducing the next generation to luxury. So he's kind of like a gateway. And it makes sense in the way that brands try to do that using Supreme. If you collaborate with Supreme, you're doing the same thing. Like the Tiffany & Co. Supreme collaboration, I would say is a similar effect. I have seen, because if you remember, he was pretty much the only celebrity I know of that had a high jewelry collection with Dior. And it came out quite nice, in my opinion. I liked it. It was more wearable for every day, but still very like well made. Sorry, it was very creative. So I feel like this is just a level up. Of course, Travis Scott is known for his kind of street style fashion. So Dior and Dior's creative director stays very close with the Kardashians, with and of course with Travis Scott, Kanye West, Kim Jones. He always likes to do these kind of collaborations. Just sometimes you don't know it's a collaboration because they won't outright say it, but he's always collaborating with other creative directors especially. So I see the play. I see how this would work. Now, because I think it's a hype play again, I think more purposeful than the Balenciaga one. Well, when the hype is dead, why would we work with you?
Exactly.
Right?
Like, exactly.
Your usefulness is gone.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
So... yeah,
because right now, his name is Mud. I think people were very upset because from what I understand, and I may not understand this completely, my understanding is something like this was waiting to happen. His previous concerts, again, people who handled security there, apparently, again, I don't know if this is true or not, they already warned him about the possibility of things happening. Lots of warnings had been ignored until this very, very tragic event happened. And then I think people were quite upset with the reaction afterwards as well. So again, let's see where this goes.
We will have to see, but it's not looking very good from where I'm sitting.
No. No, it's not.
We are interrupting this episode to tell you a little bit about the people behind Luxury News Weekly. I'm your host, Simbo Wakatama, the founder and CEO of Volo Bespoke. We personalize jewelry storage for the jewelry you wear. Find me on Instagram or LinkedIn at Simba Wakatama.
I'm Elizabeth Solaru, founder and CEO of Luxury Business Emporium and Elizabeth's Cake Emporium. You can find me on LinkedIn as Elizabeth Solaru or on Instagram as Luxury Business Emporium.
Not at all. Now, here's something, okay? A gang of women are going around the UK stealing Rolexes from rich people. All right? Rich dudes. All right? Most of which, I'm sure, are millionaire status because of the places they're hanging around. So let's see how they're doing this. It's kind of hilarious. I feel like they can make a movie about this. All right. So what they do is the women often work in pairs, and then they will often approach their, victims with a clipboard, looking all professional or looking all helpless, and say, hey, you want to sign this petition for this? Or, you know, do you want to fill out this survey for that? And then they will often try to target these men in, you know, very places where rich people would be, golf clubs, and the like, right? Then they'll go in for a little hug, a little kiss, you know, flatter these guys. And in the meantime, they're taking that watch right off of his wrist, and boom. They've done this about 30 times so far, and it doesn't look like it's stopping. They are called the Rolex Rippers. I feel like they could have found a better name than the Rolex Rippers, but I don't know. What do you think, Elizabeth?
Well, I think this has to be one of my favorite stories of 2022 so far. This is actually happening in the UK, in a part of the UK called Hampshire. Hampshire is very, very nice. It's a lovely part of the UK, and it's quite an affluent area. Neighborhood. I mean, it's huge. Hampshire is absolutely massive, but the particular areas that these girls are targeting, quite affluent. Now, this is the thing, right? It's the same old dynamic. You have older men, older rich men who are flattered by the attention of young women. Now, if you're doing a survey or whatever it is you're doing, you will do a survey, say, on the what we call the high street, right? That's where many people do their surveys. Yeah. So it will be on the high street. But why would two women, young women, and I bet they're pretty, you can't tell me that they're not young women and they're not pretty. So these women will drive up to your house, because one of these men, unfortunately, he was targeted right in front of his house. So imagine these women driving, driving up. And then asking you to take part in a survey. And you're obviously, as a man, you know, you see these young women, pretty young women, you're flattered and you're trying to impress. So you do the bogus survey and they go in for a hug. And if you are a respectable married man, you should be saying, stay away from me. Oh, Jezebel, do not tempt me. But no.
Do not tempt me with your surveys and your hugs.
But honestly, I just thought, I think it's the most hilarious story ever, because, you know, they're going for a hug or a kiss. And boom, the Rolex is gone. And you've got, you know, it's funny, but obviously it's quite distressing to be a victim of any theft. However, 30 Rolexes so far, that's a lot. That is a lot. So
hey, time flies.
I know, but I'm thinking that they've obviously put a lot of thought into this, and they may have a list of these men that they are targeting. So it just occurred to me that, do these women have maybe inside knowledge of men who have bought Rolexes in a certain shop, in a certain area, or maybe online? Because the postcode is a bit weird. Why are they targeting that particular postcode? I mean, I know certain, especially in the UK, certain robbers will go to postcodes in London, et cetera, et cetera. But Hampshire, that particular postcode is a bit specific. So that's all I'm going to say about that for now.
I think you're onto something, because, for instance, say the Blackmore Golf Club, right, that in Whitehill that they've targeted. all they need is one pretty girl that just works there, right? Pays very close attention to all the guests, asks them questions. She can see who the gullible ones are, who wears their watches loose every day, every time they come in, who the regulars are, who's easy to target, find out where they live because she's behind the desk and they often send mail to people or they take people's credit card information, billing information, so they have your address. This is more than likely an inside job because of the information you need. Not everyone is scammable, right? Who the lonely ones are, who the desperate ones are, who hates their wife. You need to know this stuff so that your survey trick will work, right?
Oh, absolutely. And just another thing that the police have been saying is, number one, if somebody comes up to you wanting to do a survey, they will wear an ID badge that is clearly visible. And if you have any doubt, get their name and contact the organization that they're representing, or just look it up on your phone or something. There should be a way for you to be able to link whoever's doing the survey to a proper organization. So that's number one. And another thing that the police have suggested is that these men, you know, or anyone who has jewelry or any valuables, photograph the jewelry against a very plain background. If there's a serial number, a product number, whatever it is, record that as well, so that when the police try to look for your items or track it, they are able to match that serial number.
Absolutely. And there's actually apps I've heard. I think Kevin O'Leary has invested in a platform which actually matches the dial of the watch via AI system to the watch itself and links it to an NFT so you can trace ownership or find a missing watch that way, because certain things are unique about the watch and that makes it easy to find, apparently. So I'm not exactly sure how that works, but I think in the future we're going to see a lot of loss prevention tools with high tech that'll help with that. Now, here's a watch where if you lose, you're definitely going to cry because it costs you so much money. And here's why you should care about this $81,000 Omega. Okay? Omega. Yes, Omega. You would think they don't make watches that expensive. Well, I got news for you. For their 65th anniversary, they unveiled a white gold Speedmaster. Speedmaster being, of course, kind of the Omega classic. That's the Omega staple watch. If you start with Omega, you usually go the Speedmaster. And it has a lot of history. Now, this is the Speedmaster Calibre 321 in white gold. And what's unique about this watch is that they are going with their heritage Calibre 321 movement, which is most famous from the Apollo moon missions. Okay, so the astronauts wore these watches for all six Apollo missions to the moon, and you know, of course, the successful ones, and as well. And yeah, this is a piece of history. Another thing they use for the case and the bracelet, a proprietary alloy. And this alloy is mostly white gold, so 18 karat white gold. And it also contains other metals, other very expensive rare metals such as platinum, rhodium, and palladium. Okay, so that's one of the features that make it more expensive. Another thing that's very interesting is the bezel also has enameled numbers, which, of course, is the process of melting powdered glass. It's very complicated. Well, it's difficult, let's just say that, to do, rather than the normal black bezel, solid black bezel that they usually go with. And the dial itself is an onyx black dial. And again, the actual markers on the dial are white gold as well. So, a mouthful, I know, to describe this watch, but is it worth $81,000? What do you think, Elizabeth?
Well, I think we did a podcast on Omega watches, and we said about in the last few years or so, they have been going up in value, especially in China. And that's because Chairman Mao was rumored to actually wear an Omega watch. So lots of Chinese collectors and lots of Chinese collectors with serious money who want something completely different. So I am not surprised at all that for their 65th anniversary, they've actually come up with a watch like this. Now, lots of people might say, oh my God, you know, is an Omega worth it? I don't know, but one thing I do know is this. As a investment class, I know that the value of Omegas have been going up in the last few years, and this one might end up with a collector that truly, truly values it. So who knows?
You know what's weird about this watch, right? And okay, the watch community in general has said, hell no, this is not worth $81,000. And I think I know why. Two reasons. First of all, based on the benchmark of this watch, there are a lot of other very, very prestigious watches within this price range that you could get, which kind of gain more in value. Another thing, this is not a limited edition run. It's not. You can just go in the store and buy it. So that kind of defeats the purpose, in my opinion. I think they should have just made it a limited run, even though it is made in their artisanal shop, in the atelier, which will slow the production down. It's not very limited. So it's kind of like, well, why the price gouge? And also for their 60th anniversary, they had a Speedmaster, which again was kind of a heritage model. And it was only like $5,000. So I don't know where this giant jump. I think they're trying to push the brand into the higher price points now that they're more established in Asia, and then just push it in Asia, and then it'll trickle into the rest of the world. That's what I think. But yeah, who knows?
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you. I know that the price jump might seem ridiculous, for lack of a better word. But if you are moving into the uber luxury side of things, it's a risk you need to take. And there are people who would definitely buy, because I know that in China, definitely, there are collectors who will definitely, for sentimental reasons or whatever reasons, they will buy and they will hold. Because before you know it, the Omega might creep up. I know the watch community are sneering at them right now, but you never know. It could be a buy and hold situation. But I do like what you said about they should have created a limited edition. But if I were to create a limited edition, I would have doubled that price, to be honest. But I would have created maybe just 65 watches to go to, maybe make something different about each watch, give each watch a different presentation case or whatever, but I would have done something completely different and not just done a normal run and then just expect people to pay that much. So who knows?
Who knows? And it comes in a nice box. You know, the box itself, is it worth the extra, you know, $5,000 they're probably charging for it? No. But, like we said, why should you care about this watch? Well, its historical importance, and I think this watch is the first move in a step towards the ultra high end. I think Omega is, you know, is tired of competing with Rolex and wants to give a shot at AP. You know, more power to them. See how that goes.
Absolutely. And what they could have done as well is maybe get an incredible watch designer to come in, and they could have played off that, you know, 65th anniversary, we've got this person in, and again, limited, you know, limited edition, blah 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 blah. maybe we should be doing, you know, honestly, we give all this advice for free. I mean, maybe we should be, we should be consulting for these brands. It's incredible how they roll out these things without seemingly giving it, you know, that deep thought. But anyway, what do we know?
Hey, you know, after watching a lot of these markets, we have a very different perspective. We're not just looking at the watch market. We're looking at all the luxury markets simultaneously. And to us, the customer isn't a watch person and a this person and a that person. We're kind of seeing the thread between them. And I think that's what gives us a better perspective on these things. It might seem obvious to us, but I doubt it's obvious to someone who grew up in Switzerland and all they know is urology, right?
Very well put. And I completely and utterly agree with you.
Now, here's someone who I think would wear the Speedmaster. It's James Bond. They finally found his DB5 that has been missing for 25 years. All right. So here's what happened. Two of the James Bond movies in 1963, Goldfinger and Thunderball, they had this kitted out DB5. It's beautiful. And it had all these gadgets in it. And then it got sold to a couple people, et cetera, et cetera. And eventually it ended up in a Florida airport. Okay. In Boca Raton in the late 90s. And it just disappeared. It disappeared. And then later, more recently, they found it in the possession of a Middle Eastern collector who is anonymous, okay? Somewhere in the Middle East, we know. And they believe that the collector had no idea that it was stolen. But the Art Recovery International Company found this car and is giving the collector a chance to come out in front of this and, you know, get ahead of it. They were already paid by the insurance company when they lost it, I think to the point of $4 million. But now it's worth $25 million. So, yeah, they want the car back. Elizabeth, what do you think?
Oh, this is a very, very interesting one because we've got the legal situation. Obviously, the Middle Eastern collector, he didn't know anything about it. He bought it in good faith. Is he going to be asked to give up the car? The seller, we don't know who the seller was. That's shrouded in mystery. So we need to find out who the seller is and how they got their hand on it as well. So again, there's something going there. And the third thing is that it sounds like a plot of a James Bond movie. This car, imagine this, this car, you know how they kit out the cars in the James Bond movies, the car can shoot, it can fly, it can swim underwater, it can do all manner of things, and boom, the car gets stolen. But it's interesting, though, because talking about James Bond, it was obviously during Sean Connery's stint as James Bond. So again, that adds a bit of excitement to it. But yeah, I just think, oh my goodness, this is really, really international because if it was stolen from Florida, it somehow made its way round the world and back, and now it's been recovered. So the insurance investigators will have to start unraveling that puzzle. How did it get from point A to point B? How did it disappear off the hangar? Who was working? I mean, this is a real mystery. And there is the Hercule Poirot, Agatha Christie in me trying to think about the different possibilities. But I think if I were the writers of the next James Bond movie, I will put a similar plot into the movie.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? I feel like the fact that it went missing in Florida makes perfect sense, right? Because Florida, and particularly the port of Miami, is heavy in trafficking. Heavy. Ooh. They traffic all kinds of things. So I'm thinking a cartel or mob situation took it, and then sold it and sold it and sold it and so on and so on. Because from my understanding of stolen artwork and that sort of thing, oftentimes the buyers are cartel members, they are mobsters, that sort of thing, because a regular person usually doesn't want to steal something they can afford, right? Because it's too hot and it makes them it's an unnecessary risk. But if you're already wanted, what difference does it make? You know?
Ooh, that sounds like the work of a criminal mastermind. Oh, I did not know trafficking was quite a thing in Miami. I did not know at all. Wow.
Yes, well, because if you're going to be shipping, you know, kilos of any illegal substance, you can probably move a car. Because think about it. This is in the late 90s, and this is a car from the 1960s, okay? It's very noticeable that this car is out of place and it's expensive. There's not a lot of Aston Martins from the 1960s just going around casually. So, yeah, people would remember seeing this car, that's for sure. So, yeah, I'm putting my bet on traffickers took it and sold it to, you know, someone in the Middle East when times were tough. And that's my story. I'm sticking with it.
But this is my thing, though. When people, because again, you hear about, you know, people stealing stuff and you're thinking, but if you're in a market where you're the buyer or maybe there's a middle person or something, what about is there no authentication? Is there no, you know, you need to, I mean, wouldn't you ask people to prove the provenance of the car? Will these documents be forged? I mean, you know, lots of things to think about, really, because if you're going to be paying that much money for a car that nobody else in the world has, wouldn't you at least get in touch with Aston Martin, even if it's a second-hand car? Questions, questions, questions.
I think it would show up in the news that it's lost, and then you know you have the right one.
Ah, and that would make it even more valuable, I suppose, in a perverse way.
Yes.
Ooh. Yeah. Well, well, well.
So it's quite the thing. It's quite the thing. Hmm. Very exciting story. And of course, if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts or anything like that, give us 5-star ratings. You know you love it because you've listened this long. You might as well just take the extra 5 minutes and, well, it's not even 5 minutes, you know, 5 seconds. Click, click, 5 stars, and everybody's happy. We are so happy to have you here for season 2 of Luxury News Weekly. This has been all your top stories for this.